Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a space for those who are healing from complex and developmental trauma. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach, survivor, and thriver. The intent of the podcast is to provide helpful information with insight that can validate, encourage, and support you on your healing journey. You're going to hear stories from other survivors and trauma experts, featuring therapists, coaches, and practitioners. We will open up the conversation on effective trauma healing modalities, practices, and tools. If you are interested in trauma recovery coaching, as well as recommended books and healing resources, head over to www.thehealingtraumapodcast.com. And now, here is your host, Monique Coven.
Welcome back, everyone. On today's episode, I'm chatting with Kristen Neff. And Kristen is currently an associate professor of educational psychology at the University of Texas of Austin. She's a pioneer in the field of self-compassion research, conducting the first empirical studies on self-compassion almost 20 years ago. In addition to writing numerous academic articles and book chapters on the topic, she's the author of the book, Self-Compassion, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself, as well as her latest book, Fear Self-Compassion, How Women Can Harness Kindness to Speak Up, Claim Their Power, and Thrive. I hope you enjoy today's episode with Kristen.
This episode is sponsored by Dr. Tamara McClintock Greenberg. Dr. Greenberg is a clinical psychologist and a renowned expert in the treatment of depression, anxiety, trauma, and more. Reclaim your life from CPTSD with this powerful and compassionate workbook. The Complex PTSD Coping Skills Workbook is an evidence-based approach to manage fear and anger, build confidence, and reclaim your identity. If you've experienced long-term or repeated trauma, such as childhood abuse or neglect, domestic violence, betrayal, or prolonged emotional abuse, you may struggle with intense feelings of sadness, anger, anxiety, shame, and distrust towards others. And you should know that you're not alone and your pain is real. And there are ways to improve your mental health and begin to heal. This compassionate and evidence-based workbook can help you get started.
Hi, Kristen. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, hi, Monique. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you. And I know that the audience is really excited to have you. I announced that you were going to be coming. And yeah, people were really looking forward to our conversation. So welcome. And I guess we can really dive in. When we think of Kristen Neff, at least I know I do, Kristen Neff, self-compassion. That's what comes to mind. And that's something that is so dear to our hearts, especially when we're healing from developmental trauma, complex trauma, when we've had these histories where many of us have not experienced a lived experience of somebody showing us compassion.
Yes.
And so to be able to give ourselves self-compassion is very challenging. I'm sure you understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess we can maybe start with, I've read your books. I haven't yet read Fierce Compassion, but I did buy it and it's on my list and I can't wait. And the topic, like fierce self-compassion, mm-hmm. I love, because I think we need to be fierce advocators of kindness and self-kindness and compassion to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could talk a bit about self-compassion, fierce self-compassion, however you'd like to start.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so self-compassion is very, very simply is compassion turned inward, right? So giving yourself the same type of warm support, understanding, kindness, care that you would to someone, you know, your best friend or someone else you cared about. It has three components, which are all really important. So not only kindness, but also mindfulness. In other words, a big part of self-compassion is being able to turn toward the pain which can be really challenging, especially if your pain is huge. If you, for instance, if your pain comes from trauma, it's challenging to turn toward it. But we need to be able to turn toward it at least a little bit, not all at once, but at least a little bit to start to give ourselves compassion. And then really important, the third component is a sense of common humanity. In other words, we tend to think like, you know, it's just me or something's wrong with me for having this experience, when in fact, you know, this is the human experience. Yes, absolutely. Some people suffer more than others, without a doubt. You know, people with trauma histories or people who are oppressed, they suffer more than others. But nonetheless, actually what defines being human is making mistakes, having challenges and difficulties. And so it really reminds us that all human beings are worthy of compassion. So when we give ourselves compassion, it actually connects us to others as opposed to isolating us. So that's basically what compassion is. But and at first I didn't really articulate this, but in my latest book, I talk about these two sides of compassion, which are both tender and fierce. And we need both. We always need both. And the trick is getting them into balance. So tender self-compassion is kind of the nurturing, gentle, warm, soothing energy of self-compassion. It's what allows us to just be there for ourselves, accept ourselves as we are, flaws and all, you know, accept the fact that pain is here, and, you know, it kind of allows us to hold that pain with our hearts open so that pain can start to heal. It's a good metaphor that for that would be like a mother who holds her crying child. You know, that child could be screaming its head off, but the mother, you know, hopefully at least a good mother, hopefully the ideal compassionate mother, would kind of soothe that child, rock that child, accept that child, and try to help that child, right? But it's not just mother itself. There's another side of this parenting energy, which I like to call fierce mama bear self-compassion. In other words, if compassion is concerned for the alleviation of suffering, sometimes that takes action, right? So we need to accept ourselves, but it doesn't mean we accept all our behaviors or that we accept all the situations we find ourselves in. Absolutely not, especially if they're harmful to us. So for instance, a protection, really huge part of self-compassion, drawing boundaries, standing up for ourselves, protecting ourselves, saying no. This is a key part of self-compassion. Meeting our needs, right? Really saying, hey, my needs count too. Not more than those of others, but they also count. So really asking ourselves, you know, what is it that I need? And then giving ourselves permission to take the steps to meet those needs. And then finally, motivating change. You know, a lot of people are confused. They think self-compassion is just about acceptance. Again, yes, we accept ourselves, but if our behaviors or our situations are not helping us, we want to motivate change, you know, make things better, improve things, or reach our goals, fulfill our dreams. That's also an important part of self-compassion. And again, and here's the trick, here's the tight problem, is we need both. It's like yin and yang, you know, we need both. We need to be in balance. But gender role socialization really stands in the way. People who are raised as boys, it's not actual gender, it's people who are raised to be boys are taught that they can be fierce, they can be active, they can even get angry, but they can't be tender. You know, they get called names if they're tender. And people who are raised to be women are told, you can't be too fierce, you better not get angry, you better not be too competent, or you better not, you know, be too loud. You better just focus on helping others and not actually ask anything for yourself. So gender role socialization really stands in the way of our ability to balance these two energies, which are both essential for well-being. So I actually wrote my book for women just because the blocks are different, although all people are blocked, you know. So self-compassion is an act of radical authenticity where we say, you know, these are all sides of myself that need to be honored, supported, developed because I care and want to be well.
I love that. I really, really do. And it's so true with what you said about socialization. And I'm just thinking that, you know, it's like we have this innate need to want to, for example, speak up, but then the socialization comes in and just goes squash.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, and also I have to say, you know, because I know your audience is interested in trauma, people who developmentally, they weren't allowed to speak up or they were actually harmed if they spoke up. It is scary, you know, and this is why we need the tender and the fear. So we need the tender to hold the pain of it, to help us feel safe. We don't want to judge ourselves as like, oh, that's one more thing to judge myself. I'm, you know, not speaking up. It's not like that. We need to hold the pain tenderly, give ourselves incredible compassion for just how unfairly we were treated, the pain of it, the tragedy of it all. Try to hold that as best we can with an open heart, allow ourselves, again, as much as feels safe. We don't ever want to feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. Going as far as we can, feeling safe, and that capacity builds over time. But then remembering that it's not just about this, that we also want to develop our ability to speak up. Again, maybe slowly, maybe in contexts where it does feel safer. Mm-hmm. A huge part of like the challenge of drawing boundaries, especially for a woman, but for all people, is the fear that others will dislike us. Yeah. Right. And so again, for people who it's not only just the fear that others will dislike us, but fear that others will like harm us, it's even more intense. Mm-hmm. So those kind of need to be separated out. First of all, the first thing fear self-compassion may do is say, get out of a situation if you can, where someone may actually harm you for speaking up. Mm-hmm. But then all those residual fears and patterns are going to arise. What if they dislike me? What if they get angry? And so it's like, again, it's that balance, holding those fears with comfort. I got your back. And even if they don't like you as much, I like you. Mm-hmm. I care about you. What's most important to me, you kind of say this to yourself. I know it sounds funny, but you get used to that. I care about you. What's most important is that you're authentic and you get your needs met, right? And that you aren't being harmed any longer. Mm-hmm. That actually gives us the sense of safety needed to speak up, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I like how you mentioned that we do this in really small bits, like really, yeah.
Yes. Really. We have a saying, because I co-developed the Mindful Self-Compassion Program with Chris Germer, who's a clinician. Now, I'm not a clinician. I'm a researcher, but I'm around so many clinicians. I kind of understand how this works, especially for people with trauma. We have a saying, walk slowly, but go farther, right? So just bit by bit, we talk about conscious opening and closing. In other words, if we're just shut down, if we aren't taking any learning risks, we can't learn anything new. If we're just in our old patterns, we can't grow or change.
Right.
On the other hand, if you start to be overwhelmed, if it's like too much, if you get flooded with traumatic memories or you start to disassociate or you get really activated, you also can't learn.
Right.
So you have to kind of regulate by consciously opening and closing, just kind of checking in. Is this too much for me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here's the cool thing, Monique. We have people in our program, we say, if you're doing a meditation or a practice and you start to be overwhelmed, get up, stop the practice, have a cup of tea, pet your cat. That's also an act of self-compassion.
Oh, I love that.
So it's less important how you do it. What's more important is you're really asking yourself, what do I need right now to care for myself? And that may be taking baby steps, but it's really you're cultivating the intention to care for yourself. And that's the muscle you're actually building.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I love that you're listening to your body and you're getting up if you start to feel uncomfortable or a little bit of threat. So that's really wonderful. Yeah.
But regulating it, because again, you have to push yourself a little bit, otherwise no change will happen. So it's just trying to find that sweet spot. And we'll get it wrong. That's okay. You just keep trying.
Yeah. Yeah. And it grows. That's great. Hmm. So, so can you talk to us a little bit now about fierce self-compassion? I was listening to tender and fierce, but, I'm thinking of boundaries. I'm thinking of speaking up for oneself.
Yeah.
Can you give maybe some examples of what that could look like?
88% of the work week is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
Right. So I actually recently developed an exercise on how to draw boundaries. And so the first thing to get in touch with really is what you need, right? What's good for you? oftentimes we just kind of go along with the program. You know, we just say yes when people ask us, or we just think we're supposed to do this, or we're supposed to do that, or maybe our family has told us this. So really the first step is asking, what is right for me? Do I really want to say yes, or do I think I have to say yes? Mm. Right. Now, obviously, sometimes, like as a parent, sometimes you don't want to say yes, but you have to, part of you wants to because it's your child. But sometimes actually you aren't doing it for authentic reasons. You're doing it, again, either because you're afraid of the reaction of others, or you're afraid people won't like you. Right. So identifying a boundary you want to draw, right? And then using, this is where the tender self-compassion comes in, almost like before the fear self-compassion, being tender toward the feelings of fear that come up. Sometimes the feeling of shame, if our culture has shamed us, if we aren't like good self-sacrificing women, for instance, we may feel like shame if I don't say yes. Mm-hmm. And so you got to hold all that stuff that comes, because it's going to come up. So you hold all that with that kindness and support, just like you would to a good friend. If a good friend said to you, listen, you know, Monique, I really want to say no to my mother who's asking me something. And you were saying, I really don't want to do it. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. You know, she doesn't really, it's not the right thing for me. I probably wouldn't say, you know, Monique, you're such a bad woman. Just do what your mother says. I'd probably say to them, like, hey, Monique, you have every right to say no. You know what I mean? But I'd say it with warmth and support. Mm-hmm. And then you call them the fierce mama bear self-compassion, this idea that, you know, I need to stand up for myself because no one else is going to. And also remember that society has intentionally designed it so that women are supposed to be self-sacrificing, because women were, you know, they were considered chattel. Their whole purpose was to just to raise the kids and serve the men. And you know what I mean? There's a reason we're socialized to feel guilty if we don't say yes to people, because it served the system. So you also kind of get you need a little anger in here as well. Like, am I really going to go along with that program? Is that good for me? Is that good for other people, you know, in general, right? So being able to willing to call that up. And then when you think about what to say, right, again, it's all about balance. We don't want to harm anyone. We don't want to, you know, like be rude. We don't want to be mean, but we do need to be firm and clear. So really just kind of just trying out, for instance, one thing people ask me to do a lot of things because, you know, whatever, it's a good thing, I suppose, but it can get a little overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But just saying, you know, I'm sorry. I would love to help you, but I can't. And just like, you know, just clear, firm, no wishy-washiness. I would love to help you. I'm sorry. I would love to be able to help, but I can't. Sometimes I even like model self-compassion by saying, you know, I've got some things other things I need to take care of or other obligations. And so when you do that, when you kind of model that firmness, again, in a kind way, by the way, I don't always get it right. Sometimes if I'm frustrated. So just so if you think I'm this perfect person, disabuse yourself of that notion. Sometimes I'm snappy and then I have to apologize. So, but in an ideal way, a good day, right? I'm firm. I'm kind. I just like draw that clear line. And people, most people anyway, can respect that. And that you're also sending the message, oh, okay, it's okay to say no. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe not now. Please, you know, maybe later when I've got more space or things like that. So in other words, you can validate the needs of the other person. You don't, it's like, you're being so annoying. Stop. I mean, hopefully you don't say that.
Or validate, no.
Yeah. You validate the needs of the other person, but you also really just model that, hey, I need to look out for myself and I'm sorry, I can't. And here's the thing. One thing that I'm pretty, again, I don't always do it in the best possible way, but drawing boundaries comes fairly naturally. I'm actually a little bit more fierce and tender, you might even say. Maybe that's surprising, but I have a lot of fierce energy. I just always have. If you met my mother, you'd see why. She modeled it. But one of the things that allows me to do that is I really don't care that much what other people think of me. Again, I want to be a kind person. I don't want to harm others. But because of my self-compassion practice, I've been doing this for 25 years now, I don't really need the approval of others. And this gives you freedom. This is freedom. Uh-huh. Freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is. Because you can meet a lot of your own needs. You realize that being authentic, having my heart open, this is really what's most important to me, mm-hmm. not pleasing other people.
So what's coming to my mind is, could you tell us and share with us one of the practices of self-compassion that you do?
Oh, yeah. So gosh, there's so many. So if people don't know, I've developed something called the Mindful Self-Compassion Program with my colleague, Chris Germer, and there's like 37 practices in there. But I have a lot on my website. They're especially fierce and tender. You go to selfcompassion.org. They're free. You can download them. You can try them out. But some of the practices are, So one very simple one, if I'm ever feeling like overwhelmed or really mm-hmm. agitated, you just ground your feet into the floor. Mm-hmm. It's so simple, but you can do it anywhere. You can do it when you're sitting, even if it's your boss that's freaking you out. Mm-hmm. No one knows. Mm-hmm. And you just like ground your energy in the floor, feel that solidity. What it does is it does a couple things. When you're focusing on something like that, it's kind of like the breath. It's similar, but it's a little more. Sometimes the breath can be hard because you want to hold your breath, or if you're freaked out, it's like maybe too. Your feet are just your feet, right? It's not like you can. It's not that thing where you can. You don't hold your feet. Your feet are just your feet. So you feel your feet grounded to the floor. You focus on them. So anytime we focus on one thing, it helps calm and stabilize the mind. I imagine like Mother Earth taking a lot of my stress or overwhelm. You feel that point of contact, and also. This isn't scientifically shown, but I suspect that it's because you're putting your attention as far away from your brain as possible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's a practice I use all the time. Mm-hmm. Touch, supportive touch. So when no one's looking, I'll put my hand on my heart mm-hmm. or my solar plexus, kind of to feel physically your own support. And sometimes a good one, if you want to feel strength, is like you put your fist with the hand over it. Like, I am strong, but I'm also tender, like Joan Halifax likes to say, strong back, soft front. So kind of that's a good one, physical touch. Or I do what's called the self-compassion break, which is intentionally calling in the three components of self-compassion. You can do it in like 1 minute. Call in mindfulness. This is hard. I'm scared, or I'm hurting, or this is, I feel overwhelmed. You just kind of name, you turn toward as opposed to away from the distress. You remember common humanity. This is part of being a human being. There's nothing wrong with me for feeling this way. I'm not alone. This is normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the problems is people feel like everyone else in the world is having a normal, perfect life, and it's just me who's having this difficulty. That's actually not reality. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what it means to be human is to struggle, to make mistakes, or to have difficult things happen. So when you connect with that, so that actually helps you feel so more supported, less isolated. Mm-hmm. And then words of kindness. Again, what would I say to my friend Monique or my other friend in this situation to support her right now? And the thing is, we already know what to say. It's actually not rocket science. We have, mm-hmm. most of us have developed some skills with how to be compassionate, how to be supportive. And then you kind of just try saying that to yourself. So I'll say that to myself. And it makes a huge, almost immediate difference.
That's so, so beautiful. Yeah, I remember Deb Dana shared with us, I took her training, and I think she said she got permission from you. She changed the words a little bit for the activation that often happens in our systems when we get activated. And just again, doing that same practice.
Yes.
Which is, again, everybody gets activated.
Yes.
So, you know,
I do. I'm actually quite reactive by my wiring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So got to deal with that one.
Yeah, so that's really helpful. So those practices are really great. And yeah, we can go on your website and look at more. That's helpful. So is there anything else before we close that you think could be helpful for this conversation?
Yeah, well, especially with people who are dealing with trauma or who work with people in trauma, there's a concept that hopefully everyone knows about called backdraft. So backdraft, it happens to everyone, but it's especially likely to happen for people with a trauma history. Chris Germer came up with the term. Backdraft is a firefighting term, whereas if there's a house on fire and you kind of fling open the doors to put the hose in, what happens is air rushes in and the flames rush out and it can feel really explosive. Mm. So backdraft also happens with self-compassion practice. Like our whole life, we had to close our hearts just to stay safe, just to survive. Mm. and we start to open the doors of our hearts, and kind of the fresh air of the love and care rushes in, and the old pain just rushes out. And it can feel really explosive. It can feel overwhelming. Sometimes we get angry. Sometimes we don't know what's happening. People often interpret that as a sign that they're doing self-compassion practice wrong. It's actually a sign that you're doing it right. Right? It means that you're opening your heart. This is natural. It's normal. But it does mean we need to slow down a little bit. Right? So again, that conscious opening and closing. You don't want to just fling open the doors of your heart. Maybe just like, okay, whoa, that's too much. I'm being flooded with memories. Okay, so I'm just going to feel my feet grounded to the floor, something like that. Or I'm just going to maybe feel some warm touch if that feels safe. Or I'm going to go more slowly. I'm going to see how much can I handle before feeling overwhelmed. Then I'm going to kind of modulate so that I'm not so overwhelmed as a way of caring for yourself. Mm-hmm. So Chris Grummer likes to say, don't worry, eventually kaboom becomes kabloom.
I like that.
That kabloom. Right. So again, it is normal. It's to be expected. Don't be freaked out if you don't, maybe you go numb. That may happen as a form of backdraft. You get really angry or you just get overwhelmed. It is difficult, again, especially with trauma. Unfortunately, the good news about trauma is that the research shows very clearly that self-compassion is a way to help us kind of reparent ourselves. I know that people talk about reparenting themselves, but these are actual techniques and tools to help us do this, to give ourselves the compassion that we may not have received from others. And it is effective, especially with the help of a good therapist. It can be really useful, especially with complex trauma, to have a therapist helping you through all this. Yes. But expect backdraft just means walk a little more slowly. You'll get through it. It will be okay. Don't worry.
Oh, that's good. Really good. Oh, well, thank you so much, Kristen, for sharing with us today. So again, can you tell us if people want to find out more information about you, your work?
Yeah. Just type in self-compassion. I got in early, so all the Google algorithms lead to me. So spell it any which way, you'll find my website. So I've got some practices on my website. But if you'd like to actually take some training, there's a link to the Center for Mindful Self-Compassion, which is the nonprofit Chris and I developed. And you can actually take online mindful self-compassion training. We have a lot of different courses available. So, and I'm also in person. Depending where you are, this kind of with COVID, it's kind of got all weird. So most stuff is online at this point, but it's readily available.